How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, I'm John Weeks from Plant-Based Face-Off, the Instagram page all about trying new plant-based food alternatives. I try, compare and rate the latest food in the vegan world and let you know which is best. I'm talking everything from burgers to cheese to chocolate. Check me out on Insta at Plant-Based Face-Off. Now though, it's time for this week's podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to The Contest and Me, a podcast from The Eurotrip.
So hello and welcome to the final episode of our special mini-series. This is the Eurotrip, The Contest and Me, where over the last few weeks we have been chatting to some of the most well-known Eurovision superfans. I'm of course Rob, and as ever, joined by...
Mr. James Rowe. Hello. I don't know why, that's just my Twitter username. I just tend to go by James most of the time. Yes, I'm back as well. Glad to be back as well for another episode of The Contest and Me, because as you say, Rob, we've been having lovely conversations with some of the most wonderful people, with some great and interesting stories to tell about the Eurovision Song Contest.
We certainly have. I'm still taken aback as to how formally you introduced yourself. I'll be honest, I got you to introduce yourself because it was slightly more awkward when somebody has to introduce themselves. But you are right. It's been brilliant over the last few weeks hearing from all of these brilliant people. You may remember last week I got myself in a right old mess trying to work out whether the term was wormhole or indeed what I have since learned it is rabbit hole. So when I was looking around at the Great British Song Contest last week, if you listened to last week's episode, you'll know what I'm on about. If you didn't, you'll have no clue. I said wormhole. I meant rabbit hole. Thank you to everybody that corrected me, which was quite a lot of you, as it turns out.
Yeah, not the first time you've made a mistake, is it, here on the podcast? But anyway, shall I quickly tell everybody who's joining us on this week's podcast?
Please do.
I'll gladly. I haven't got much time left before this music runs out, so let me hurry up. I've got about 10 seconds left or something. So, joining us this week on episode 6 of The Contest and Me is Zoe London. Of course, you'll know her on Twitter. She's a multi-genre DJ. She's been there and everywhere and is a massive fan, like everybody else who's joined us on the podcast, of the Eurovision Song Contest. So we'll be hearing from her very, very shortly.
You're listening on Acast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This is The Eurotrip, The Contest and Me.
That's right. Episode number 6 of The Eurotrip, The Contest and Me. Rob described it as the last episode of the series, but as you may have heard over the last couple of weeks, there is a little bit of a bonus coming next week. And I promise you, Rob, you can back me up here, the bonus episode is a biggie.
I don't want to... I was going to say I don't want to keep people listening. Of course I do. That's the whole point. You don't want people to turn off within the first however many minutes it's been of this podcast. But if you stay until the very, very end... This is now just going to result in everyone scrolling to the end, isn't it? If you stay until the very, very end, you may hear a little tease, a little clip of who is joining us next week. That's all I'll say.
That is a bold promise from somebody who's not editing this week's podcast, isn't it?
As far as I'm aware, that clip already exists.
For the listener's sake, let's hope so.
A little on-air production meeting. We do this all the time. Me and you should probably talk about the podcast before we start recording the podcast, rather than talk about absolute nonsense, which we spoke about before we recorded this week's podcast. But I am going to bring that nonsense to you, everybody at home, shortly. I'll share with you what we were talking about. But first, James, loads of stuff from last week.
Yeah, loads of stuff from last week about last week's episode. If you remember, Rob had a wonderful conversation with Scott Bryan, the TV critic that I'm sure you all know. And loads of people have been getting involved on Twitter and Instagram about that conversation. Mostly about the conversation about the BBC and the UK's approach to Eurovision, which seems to get a lot of people talking every single week, doesn't it, Rob, when we chat about that?
It really does. I think everybody has an opinion on it. I think everybody's opinion maybe is slightly different as well, but everybody does have an opinion on what the BBC should do, and that's what's so difficult for the BBC, because there are so many different avenues they could take. To be fair to them, they have tried lots of different avenues over recent years, and none of them have particularly proved successful. So who knows what we're going to get in 2022. It's exciting, though. It's exciting to see what's going to happen, because nobody knows.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things Scott Bryan said as well, he said, it doesn't feel like we're part of the process. He kind of wants to see a selection programme come back to our screens, and a lot of people agreed with that. James on Twitter got in touch. Another James, not me, said...
Tweeting about your own content now. Tweeting about our own interviews.
James said, we used to tap into those resources a lot more when we were using Rob's favourite, A Song for Europe, in the late 90s and early noughties. Yeah, we did, because Scott said, you know, the BBC have got BBC Introducing, they've got loads of links at festivals, and he would really love to see that explored a little bit more. And then another little avenue that got talked about as well was Kate Miller-Heidke's entrance at Eurovision in 2019, which got Nick to get in touch with a video, and it looks like he was in the arena when it happened, of Kate being wheeled on that massive stick she performed on. He said he loved the interview this week with Scott, and reminded me just how brilliant Kate's entrance was in the arena in Tel Aviv. More of this, please, in 2022. I don't know if he's just asking for everybody to perform on a pole. I don't know if that can get written into the Eurovision rules, but maybe. Maybe it can happen.
Oh, well, we still don't know where Eurovision 2022 is going to be, do we, at the time of recording this? It's always a fear that they're going to announce it, you know, within hours of me having said that, and then this will all be out of date. But who knows if they do it in the Alps, maybe. Stick everyone on a pole. It'd be quite blustery. They'll be buffeted around. Adds a bit of jeopardy to the whole thing.
Yeah, your mind is something else. You say we don't know where Eurovision 2022 is going to be. However, it has been a busy week, hasn't it, actually, in the world of Eurovision, since we last spoke to each other, and of course you listening at home, since last Wednesday.
It certainly has. It's almost as if we should bring back the Eurotrip proper, because there's plenty to talk about, because there is. I don't know where you want to start. You want to go Melfest to begin with?
Yeah, let's do Melfest, as we're recording on Tuesday afternoon. Something happened on Tuesday morning. What was it?
It did. We found out that, very excitingly, Melfest is going back on tour in 2022. Insert Melfest going back on tour klaxon.
New Chevy!
But yeah, Melfest going back on tour, which is very, very exciting. The final is going to be in the Friends Arena in Stockholm, not in Annexit, the venue next door, or the smaller venue that they used when the pandemic was in full swing last year, or this year. Honestly, I can't keep up with myself. But we're going in arenas again in Sweden, all being well. And it got me down rabbit hole. This is the nonsense that we were talking about before we started recording this week's podcast. I said to James, I'm sure that there was a round of Melody Festivalen that was in the Arctic Circle one year, because we got talking about this because the second chance round of Melfest 2022, which I'm going to get James to pronounce the name of the city. James?
I'm going to say that it's going to be in Unskuldsvik. Does that work? Yeah. Sounds close enough, doesn't it?
It's, yeah, we'll go with that when he's got Bella Kvist back on, or South Dalander, don't we? Anyway, that's quite north in Sweden, so that's how I got onto that. And it turns out I was right. The second chance round of Melfest 2008 took place in a town called Kiruna. And Kiruna is in the Arctic Circle. And none of the people that were in the second chance round did that well in the final in 2008. And Charlotte Pirelli won it with Heroes. But it looked like a jolly old trip. Quite a chilly one, though, by the looks of it.
Yeah, I imagine so. Pretty much in the Arctic Circle in February or March is definitely going to be cold. And also, there isn't really much else to add to that. It was just that Rob fell down a rabbit hole, and that was about it. There's no, you know, there's no relevance to that conversation, is there?
Absolutely none. Absolutely none whatsoever. The other thing, of course, we found out who is going to be at Junior Eurovision 2021. So I was going to say in a few weeks' time, that's a bit optimistic, in a few months' time, 3 or so months' time, the Sunday before Christmas, which I still find is a hilarious piece of scheduling, we're going to have 19 countries, aren't we, in Paris, which is very, very exciting.
It is. And also I've noticed, I hope this is right, I think it is, it's on the 19th of December. There's going to be 19 countries, and I think it's the 19th edition of Junior Eurovision. That's quite good, isn't it?
So maybe they have thought about it a little bit more. Mm. Maybe I need to give them a little bit more credit. But two very big bits of Eurovision news there. And I'm gonna go out on a limb. We are going to do what we can to bring in the best coverage of Junior Eurovision, best coverage of Melfest again. You had Melfest Monday this year. Is it coming back? Fingers crossed. That's all we can say. But it'd be great to bring you even closer to both of those events, and even more as we go on to Eurovision 2022.
Absolutely. So if you want, let us know if you want even more coverage of Junior Eurovision. Let us know if you want to see Melfest Monday return. You can let us know on Twitter and Instagram, or if you just want to send a begging letter, you can send that to hello@eurotrippodcast.com. And also on Twitter and Instagram, we are just @EurotripPodcast.
This is the Eurotrip.
When you aren't listening, you can find us on social media.
We're @EurotripPodcast.
Warming you up for the Eurovision Song Contest.
So here we go then. It is time for, I'm going to keep saying, final interview of this series of The Contest and Me. And before we get to James, your brilliant chat with Zoe London, which is excellent, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's joined us, because it has been brilliant bringing you this mini-series over the last few weeks. Because when we were thinking about it months ago, you know, what should we have to fill the gap to bridge Eurovision 2021 and Eurovision 2022? We had this idea and we weren't sure how it's going to go. But I, for one, have been delighted to see all of you enjoying it, all of you listening. And yeah, thank you to everyone that joined us, because each and every one of the guests that have joined us over the last 5 or so weeks, 6 or so weeks, however many weeks, James, I don't know, time is still a mystery to me, have all been brilliant and so generous with their time. And yeah, we can only be grateful to them for spending half an hour or so to sit on a Zoom call with either me or you.
Yeah, it's been tremendous. You say half an hour. Zoe London, I think, was just over an hour. I don't know how she managed to commit so much time for chatting to me. But it's been lovely, hasn't it? Every single one of them have all been so genuine, so passionate about the contest. And we've had such a great reaction from you guys listening at home, getting in touch with us online, just to tell us how much you've enjoyed it. Because clearly, you've enjoyed it just as much as we have, which is always lovely to hear.
And it's a good job you've enjoyed it, because I'm not sure we've said it enough. As much as I said last episode of the series, stay till the end, everybody. You'll find out who's joining us next week in that special bonus.
So hold on, we are actually telling people at the end of this one, or is it just a clue?
It's a pretty... Again, this is an on-air production meeting, isn't it? We are heavily hinting as to who is joining us next week.
Okay. Let's wrap up this on-air production meeting. Is it that clip that I sent you the other day that we're going to play at the end? Because if it is, that's
yes,
grand.
It is. That's it. So what we're going to do, I'm going to say goodbye. You're going to say goodbye. And then if people hang around, like one of those Marvel post-credit scenes. And then if they stick around, they're going to get that clip and they're going to go, I can't believe they're on the podcast next week. And then everybody will be happy.
Okay, wonderful stuff. Okay, meeting over. Yeah, meeting over. Let's get to this week's podcast with, of course, Zoe London. You will know her as a wonderful multi-genre DJ. She's been doing the rounds for around a decade or so, I think. You'll have seen her at festivals like Reading and Leeds, Download Festival. She was also part of RuPaul's Drag Race UK in Series 1, if any of you watched that. I'm sure many of you will have done. And also was the after-party DJ for Concert in the Dark, the Eurovision pre-party, earlier this year. So it's great to have her on the podcast, and you'll just hear just how passionate she is about the Eurovision Song Contest.
I, for one, cannot wait. I've heard a little bit of this interview before, but I'm going to sit back, going to get myself a little tea. Going to relax, going to enjoy this, because as with all of the interviews that we have had, they have been so interesting. It's been a really interesting kind of social experiment asking all of our guests the same question, because everybody's had a different answer, and it's just interesting to see everybody's different perspectives about Eurovision, how they got into Eurovision. Yeah, just really, really interesting. So if you've got any thoughts on what you're about to hear with James and Zoe, then get in touch on social media at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, or for those long messages. I say long messages. They don't even need to be long. Send us a one-line email if you want. hello@eurotrippodcast.com.
That's right. But without any further ado, shall we get into it then? Here's Zoe London on the Eurotrip, the contest and me.
This is the Eurotrip.
Zoe London, everybody's favourite music DJ. Welcome to the Eurotrip, the contest of me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again. I loved my time on the podcast last time, so I'm so happy to be back.
Oh, it's our pleasure, honestly. It's great to have you back. Obviously, we talked to you back in May during Eurovision 2021 season, which is where I want to start. We might as well. Shall we have a little bit of a reminiscing session?
Oh, please, go on. I wish we could go back and watch it all again.
Oh, you and me both. What were your thoughts on the contest that we had this year?
I just loved it so much. I think, you know, obviously it felt more sweet than normal, didn't it? Because we'd waited so long for it. But I just thought it brought everything, the drama. I mean, that vote, I was like screaming my house down. I just couldn't believe it. Well, obviously when our zero came in, and then when all those other zeros, I was like, ah! I've never seen anything as dramatic as that. And I felt like obviously the build-up right at the end, we still didn't know which way it was going to go. Like, it was amazing.
I think it was so dramatic, wasn't it? I think it was one of the most dramatic editions we've had in the last decade, for sure.
It must have been. It must have been one of the most drama-filled votes where it just fully changed the entire time, at least that I can think of, for a while.
And from a music perspective, did you have... I was going to say, did you have favourites? I imagine you definitely did have favourites. Tell me which ones they were.
Oh gosh, well obviously I love Daddy Freya, and I was absolutely gutted for them when obviously their COVID came through, and you could see how sad they were, and it made me sad, and I was like, oh, I just want to hug you. And then on the actual night, didn't he have like an iPad for his face or something, didn't he? So I loved Daddy and on all of them. I'm not going to pronounce a bad name because every time I try and pronounce it I loved Finland. I thought that did really well and came across really well. And like, I follow a lot of people that are like rock journalists or metal, people that work in that industry. And seeing them be like, oh my God, this is really good. You know, I love watching that live reaction from the public that are like completely unaware until that one day. I think for me, that kind of makes it even more special, doesn't it? Because we've had like, 5-6 months of the build up. We know all the songs, all the lyrics, every single little detail about every artist, we know everything. But they're watching it and they're like, whoa, what is this? And I think for me, my highlights were seeing Twitter go crazy over Gendrick and that crazy costume. And they were just like, what the hell is this song? Which I loved. And yeah, just the little details, you know, like the reaction to Russia's costume. And I'm trying to think of like other things that Twitter were just like, whoa. I spent a lot of my time on Twitter, so I was watching the contest, but also enjoying the live commentary. And that made it extra special for me. And I had some of my friends around, and we made loads of like European food, and I literally covered my house in flags, and yeah, it was so fun.
I think one of the things you missed out there, impossibly, about what was happening online during the night was just clearly the entire world falling in love with Måneskin.
Oh my God, I know. Who could have predicted that? I mean, we all knew how charismatic and how sweet and how lovely they were, but this kind of huge trajectory that they've gone on is crazy. I've never seen anything like it with Eurovision before. And, you know, didn't they just do a cover with Iggy Pop as well?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just crazy. It's still trending on TikTok.
Which is crazy, because as we're chatting now, it's, what, 3 months or so since the contest. And I was chatting to a friend today about their, you know, their meteoric rise. And, you know, like you say, we've never seen anything like it. You know, this must be like what it was like for ABBA to sort of get that stardom just immediately.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, this is a real turning point in the contest. If you think back to previous kind of turning points where everything kind of changed after that, I'm thinking of Wild Dances, like, straight away. Everything was completely different after that, wasn't it? When that won, people were just like, oh, okay, this is the kind of stuff we can send. And then we had a whole era of that kind of style of music. And I'm just really excited to see what this, you know, it feels kind of cliche to call it the TikTok generation, but I guess it kind of is, to see what they bring to the contest, because they've really embraced it from all over the world. And yeah, it's fully trending on TikTok still now, which, yeah,
it doesn't show any signs of slowing up either, which honestly is fantastic. But if it gets more people involved with the contest, if it gets me more people involved with the artists that come from Eurovision, it is amazing. However, I want to take the time now to wind the clock back to the very beginning for you at least, and find out what your very first Eurovision memory is.
The very first one. I have memories of early contests, but I'm not sure I could pinpoint the exact year, because I remember watching it on TV, you know, back when we only had 5 channels on our TV. So there wasn't a lot to choose from anyway. It was like, you watch that or you don't. And my parents were very much in the, we're not going to watch this camp. But I remember going upstairs, my parents' bedroom, where there was a second TV, because I was just desperate to watch this contest. Obviously, I loved music as a kid. And I was just like, what is this? They're singing in different languages. I've never seen anything like that before. I have a really vivid memory of, I want to say 2002, watching it. And just, I must have been about 12, 13 at that point. And just being like amazed by everything that I saw, like just the whole glitz, the glamour, the culture, the fact that it was live. Like, even that is exciting as a kid, right? You're just like, oh, this is really cool. Everybody in Europe is watching this. Something so wonderful about knowing there are people just like you all over the world sitting watching the exact same thing at the same time. And I've always been drawn to stuff like that. And yeah, I think really that was probably the moment. But my mum said I've been watching it. So I must have been watching it pre then, but maybe just didn't know what it was and was just like, oh, this is fun. Because she has memories of us being, we used to always go to Greece on holiday. So it would either be Cyprus or Crete. And I would have been like 9 or 10. And I used to beg my dad. I'd be like, please take me to the taverna. I want to watch the Eurovision. And my dad would take me to the taverna and he'd sit there with a beer and he'd just read the paper. And I'd sit there like this on this tiny little, it was all in Greek, obviously, wasn't it? And I was just like, for like 4 hours. and yeah, I have a really vivid memory of watching that. And we were in Greece when they won, when Helena Papirizou won. And I remember watching that and being like, this is so exciting. Because obviously I hadn't really, you know, obviously the last British win was in my lifetime, but I was a little bit too young to kind of appreciate it properly. So I kind of enjoyed that moment of everybody being like, oh my God, we just won the Eurovision. So yeah, I remember that pretty well. But I'd say probably about 2002, because I really vividly remember every way that I can and like wanting to play that again and again and again after the contest. So yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, that some of your earliest memories of it and, you know, being drawn to it are just, you know, hiding yourself away in your parents' bedroom watching on a little box TV. I say that only because I imagine so many other people, me included, have the same memories, because some of my earliest memories of, you know, falling in love with the contest are just watching it alone, because my mother wasn't interested in watching it either, you know, because it was a bit of freedom more than anything, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And like, you know, you couldn't just go on Twitter and discuss it with other people and see other people's reactions. You were just sat there watching it. Yeah, just on a little terrestrial TV with the dodgy signal. And yeah, I think a lot of people will have very, very similar experiences of watching it like that, because yeah, it definitely was something that maybe different generations didn't get or didn't understand why, and maybe just then never really watched it, you know.
So from trying to figure out your very first Eurovision memory to another difficult question of trying to pinpoint the moment you think you first fell in love with a contest, whether it may be hiding upstairs in your parents' bedroom or maybe it was one of the times you were on holiday in Greece, do you think you can work out what that moment was, whether it was a specific song or something where it just sort of clicked with you and you thought, I am a fan?
I think it was Wild Dances. That really like cemented it for me. I just loved it, everything from the horns and the outfits and the drums and the, I was just like, this is sick. I've never seen music like this. And yeah, I remember, I know it was that because when it was then my school talent show that year, I did a dance to Wild Dances.
Did you now?
Like, I love it so much, yeah. Which my mum has probably gone VHS somewhere.
Which was going to be my next question, because clearly I'm not the only one who wants to see that.
Could you imagine? I bet she does. Oh, I need to ask if she's got it. Just maybe I'm crazy. But yeah, I love that song. And I'm pretty sure that was like the exact moment where I was then like, okay, every year I'm going to watch this. This is something I really, really like. And then, yeah, lucky for me, we were in Greece the next time when they won. And then I really loved it. And I was like, this is my life now. Yeah, there's no going back.
Oh, honestly, some of those early memories are just some of the best, because, you know, you're just growing the love for the contest then. And some of the early memories just sort of stick with you for so long. And you've mentioned some really strong songs so far, just as we've been chatting, which sort of brings us, well, we'll do favourite song in a moment, actually. Can we do favourite year beforehand?
Ooh.
Which I'm going to say this before every song and then probably after before every question. Every question is very difficult, but this is arguably one of the hardest. Trying to pinpoint what your favourite year, your favourite Eurovision year actually is. It could be for the music. It could be for the host. Oh. It could just be for the overall package. But what do you think it is?
2014 is really special to me because that was the first time I went to the contest in Copenhagen. And I went to that on my own. I didn't know anybody then. I'd not really met anyone from the community.
Wow.
I had my blog. And I applied for the press pass on a whim because I was like, well, I do talk about it on my blog. They might give me one. How will I know until I try? And then they did. And I was like, oh, okay. And wow. Even that was exciting. That was amazing. I got to go in the press area. And so, yeah, I probably would say that one is my favorite. And the songs are really good in that year as well. But maybe that I'm biased because I went.
Maybe a little bit. I went in, the only year I've been is 2018.
And I went in that year too.
Oh, did you now? We should chat about 2018 a little bit. What was 2018 like for you, given I was there and I can sort of relate? Apologies to anybody listening who wasn't there, but we might as well chat about it a little bit.
Why weren't you there? Oh my God, I loved it. I mean, listen, I got spoiled absolutely rotten in 2018. I don't think I'll ever top it in my life. I had a lovely wedding day, but I think Eurovision 2018 maybe just pips the post. Because one, it was my birthday, so that was special alone. And I had been invited by Eurovision themselves. I met John Olesand. I got taken around everybody's dressing room. So I met like all the artists. They bought me a birthday cake, like at Eurovision. I was like, you got me a cake. And we had amazing seats. I met the guy, Mr. Lordy. I met him. I met everybody. And they took photos of me on the blue carpet, like press photos. Everything was exciting. So yeah, really, I should say that year was the best one.
But wow, honestly, I thought we were going to have comparable stories here.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Blown all mine out of the water. But
I know, but that will never happen again. I don't think that will happen again. That was like, that was a one-off special occasion. They did a thing where basically they invited one influencer who was like a diehard super fan. You can guess who that was. So they basically got these like two different coverage things where we were both like, she was seeing everything for the first time. Like, had like never watched it, never been a part of it, nothing. And was just like, oh my God, what is happening? Whereas then I'm there like, this is that, blah, blah, blah. And then when we met John Ola, she was just like, hi. And there's me like, oh my God. She's looking at me like, why are you freaking out about this guy? I'm like, you don't know, this fucking John Ola Sand. Like, and it was very fun. One of my highlights was after all of the songs had finished, she put everything in her bag and got up and went to leave. And I was like, where are you going? She was like, it's finished. I was like, no, it's not finished. And she looked at me and she went, well, how long is left? I was like, probably about 2.5 hours. And she went, oh. I think she thought it was just a big concert and then didn't realise about all the vote and everything. But she was getting into it. You know, when it started rolling in and she was like, oh, I see that every country is voting and then we're going to pick a winner. And I was like, yes. And yeah, it was good fun. And she was very sweet. And afterwards, we got to go to Netta's like winning press conference. And she didn't have to do any of that, but she came along with me and was like very, you know, she got into it. She got into the spirit of Eurovision. But yeah, it was very fun watching it with someone who'd never seen it before.
I was going to try and ask what your standout moment from 2018 would be, but I guess it would be...
There's too many.
too much to choose. So I'm going to ask it anyway. What was your standout moment from 2018? You've got to try and answer it. Go on, give it a go.
But I don't know. Really, just it was such a lot. And I took every single minute of everything they gave me. They were like, you know, do you want to go and look at this? Would you like to meet these people? Do you want to go into hair and makeup? Do you want to go? I was like, yes, 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 yes. Like, I didn't stop. Some of the others, they went back to get ready. They took a lot of time. They were like, oh, you know, maybe it's all right. And I was like, no, I want to see everything. Because I just knew that I was like, this opportunity will never, ever happen again, ever. And my manager that had like sort it all out, she always says to me now, she's like, no matter what I do, I'll never top that, will I? I'll never be able, you know, you could book the best DJ gig in the world. She's like, but I know that in your mind, it won't top that day that you went to Eurovision. And I was like, it won't, nothing will.
Zoe, both you and I know that that's not true. And we are both and so many other people waiting for the day that you get to do a Eurovision event or the Euro Club or something. That's going to be the absolute dream come true, right?
Oh, I really hope so. I mean, I would just love to be there at Euro Club playing these songs, because this is what, you know, on my Twitch channel when I was playing my Eurovision set this year. And I'm playing songs that like some people have forgotten about or songs that didn't qualify. And just seeing people's reactions is like my favorite thing in the whole world. Even just in the chat, they were like, what? How did you get inside my brain? And I'm like, because I know, I get it. I also want to hear that song that didn't qualify from whenever. And I just feel like that environment in the Euro Club, I can't picture it. I would just love to do that and just see everybody go, ah! So hopefully someone will be listening to this podcast and they'll go, oh, we'll get her into the Euro Club. That would
be yes, cool. Please. We're not begging, but we're just politely asking. If you are responsible for the Euro Club, please give Zoe London a call. We'd desperately love it to happen. We've been chatting about music there. We've been chatting about some amazing songs as well, which is a perfect opportunity to move on to difficult question number, whichever it is now. A favourite Eurovision song. Apologies in advance. Do you want to try and have a go at this one, Zoe?
That's really hard. Just one, not like 5 or 10.
I think 10 might be pushing it. You go on, throw some out there. We can try and play around with a few.
This is hard. So when the Eurovision was cancelled in 2020, they did that show, didn't they, on the BBC? What was it called?
Eurovision Come Together, I think.
Come Together. Yeah. I was thinking Shine a Light, but that's what they called the actual show, wasn't it? And then they asked me to be part of the panel that chose like the songs that were like everybody's favourite Eurovision songs. And that I was allowed to have 10. And that was a struggle alone. But I'm pretty sure I put my number one as Everywhere That I Can. Just because of like what I said to you, I just have such good memories of watching that. And having never seen any kind of Turkish culture or anything before, seeing them in their traditional costumes and belly dancing and hearing the kind of traditional kind of Greek sound, not Greek, sorry, Turkish sound in the song. That for me is such a standout track.
I feel you moving on a different coast, making a way for a distant coast. You say you love me and you roll your eyes, turn to stare at the empty skies. I love you so for every pass, all that, all we done is to pass back to grade number one. Come on now, now, I want to show you all again what it would be like. Just let go and let me love you every way that I can.
I mean, of course I love Loreen. And I love Lordi because I'm a little rock grub at heart. And I love, what else?
What do you look for then? Because you've named some standout winners, really. What do you look for when you're trying to choose, but you know, when something really stands out for you, what is it that grabs you or grabs your attention when you hear an amazing Eurovision song?
For me, it's just something different, something I've not heard before, you know? I think for me, there just has to be some sort of element where you're like, yes. And that's why, you know, you can't help but gravitate towards the ones that won, because obviously a lot of people watching had the exact same thought and were just like, oh, this is amazing. And, you know, I love the old contests, but I'm very much like a kind of 2000 onwards. That's like my favorite era of Eurovision. I'll watch an old one if it's on, don't get me wrong, and I'll be like, oh, it's so fun, it's so sweet. But I really love the more kind of modern contests, and yeah, I think just kind of looking for something totally different. But I've got loads of like random favorites. Like I love Jesse Matador from France. I can't remember the year, was it 2010?
10, yeah.
I always listen to that, and it's just such a banger because it was so different. It was that kind of fusion of the Caribbean Jamaican style music with French and then like pop and everything. And I remember at the time being like, why isn't this done better? Like, this is absolute banger. And yeah, I just think something a little special.
It's crazy, isn't it, the way that Eurovision just sort of opens your eyes to just different cultures. Rob is going to tell me off for mentioning this, but I now adore French music just because of the Eurovision Song Contest, and I bang on about it all the time, and Rob tells me off for doing it all the time. But I didn't but I didn't know I loved it until Eurovision came along, and now half my Apple Music is just filled with it just because of what amazing Eurovision did. You know, it's the same for you, I guess, where, you know, you find a culture, or not necessarily one single culture, but Eurovision does just open your eyes to so much more than you would have seen ordinarily.
One that I can think of that sticks out in my mind in that example is from 2019, from Australia, didn't qualify, Electric Fields with Happy 2000 and whatever. Now, I listened to all their music and I have never in my life heard anything like that, that kind of Aborigine, Australian, fusion, electro, just amazing. And, you know, I didn't hate the one that they sent in the end, but I didn't love it just because I really fell in love with the sound that I had never, ever heard before. And I always listen to like the whole catalogue of stuff on my iPhone. And I remember when they rung in 2020, because they do it before us, obviously, and they got them to do the soundtrack. And as soon as it started playing on my TV and they were like, oh, Australia's celebrating, I was like, that's Electric Fields. I know that stuff. And I just feel like a lot of people are missing out on so many beautiful genres of music that they necessarily wouldn't find or care to find to listen to. In not only the contest, but also in the kind of national finals and the qualifying rounds. There's so much amazing stuff out there. And I'm not surprised that you found that kind of love of French music, because I totally feel you. I feel a bit that way with the kind of Greek music. I've definitely delved into some of those artists and found different similar artists, because, yeah, it's just amazing for opening your mind like that.
One last quick one on music and songs before we move on to another question. Yeah. Tell me one of your favourite songs to play in a live DJ set.
Oh, I think I said it to you earlier. I always play La La Love, because it's a club tune, really. And a lot of people don't know what it is, but they're still like, oh, this is good. And especially like if you remix it a little bit and just take that little sample of that, la, 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 like people don't know, but they're like, oh, this is great. So I tend to always play that. And then what else do I play? You know, Måneskin right now, people ask me to play that in my DJ sets. Like when I played at Download Festival, they were asking me to play it. And I was like, at Download? This is a metal festival. But people were like, play Måneskin. I was like, okay, sure.
The power of Eurovision knows no bounds, does it?
Amazing.
Oh, absolutely incredible. Shall we move on to, I'll say it again, another difficult question.
Why are they all difficult?
I know, apologies. I wish I could just say what's your favourite colour and just move on with things. But sadly,
why isn't it a test about Eurovision?
Next time you come on, we'll do a quiz.
Yes,
and then maybe
please.
not this time. We'll do most memorable Eurovision moment. You've had a few. Ooh. What do you think this one's going to be?
I feel like I mentioned quite a few. Thinking about like a dramatic vote, obviously this year's was like super dramatic. But that 2018 one, that was really dramatic too. And I have memory, obviously being in the arena heightens things even more because everybody around you is like, oh my God. But I have a memory of that being like, oh, they're actually going to win. Meta is actually going to win. I love watching old ones, like ones from the 90s, where, well, mostly the one where we won, just pretty much the one where we won. But obviously, I wasn't quite old enough to experience it, but you can kind of get the secondhand joy, don't you? And there's something really lovely about watching that clip of Katrina and the Waves having won, and they're sort of rolling the credits. And you can just hear in Terry Wogan's voice how like excited he is. And whenever I'm in a bad mood, I always go and put it on and it always makes me happy. So that, you know, I watch that quite a lot because it's quite a lovely moment. Every corner of my heart.
That's up from us here in Dublin. Thank you for joining us. It's been a wonderful contest. See you next year, somewhere in the United Kingdom. Hats off, Raw McCree to Katrina and the Waves.
I feel like I've mentioned it loads, but when I was younger, watching Lordi win, I just thought it was really cool. I think because at the time, I was still kind of discovering who I was. I must have been about 15, 16. And I was really into my rock and punk music. And then obviously I really loved Eurovision. And having a kind of mixed identity like that when you're young is quite confusing, I guess. And then when the culture that you love outside of that then wins the thing that you love separately, for me, that was like quite an important moment, I think, in my life where I was like, I don't have to hide one thing or the other. These things do interlap. And there obviously are lots of other people like me. Because prior to that in the contest, you know, there's some rock music, but none really that I can think of I'd ever won in that same fashion that they did. And that just felt like quite a significant moment, I think, as a teenager in like a My Chemical Romance t-shirt, watching that and thinking, maybe I do fit in this culture and I do fit in that culture too. And it's been really exciting to see these kind of overlaps of genre just keep going right up until now. Obviously, we were talking about earlier, this incredible TikTok generation embracing Måneskin, making it trend, make it like the most popular. And yeah, for me, probably that moment was, I was just like, oh my God, this is my life now.
Hopefully we find ourselves over the next few years or so with so many other people having that realization of what the Eurovision Song Contest is about and it just growing and growing and growing. And hopefully,
I'm really interested to see how the Americans embrace the America. They called it the American Song Contest, right?
That's right, yeah.
It's not called USA Vision or whatever, it's just America Vision. I'm really interested to see how that'll go down. Whether it'll really take off and then they'll like taking that culture into their own culture and then maybe understanding Eurovision as a whole, or whether it just won't, I don't know. And I find stuff like that really interesting, kind of seeing these new people coming into it. My friend Jack Saunders, he's on BBC Radio 1 and he plays, his show is called Future Artists. And now I played him Måneskin about 2 weeks before Eurovision because I was like, you'll like this. this is cool. And he listened and he was like, this is really cool. And then about a month after Eurovision, got them on the show.
Did that just happen? That just happened. That actually just happened. Damiano. It's my skin. I was just hanging out on the show just there. And I'm going to be totally honest with you guys. I am completely and utterly flustered. And need a little bit of time to recover from that interview. I am crushing, stanning, and just overall feeling a little bit emotional after that one. I love Måneskin.
Now, when would you ever see that crossover of Radio 1's future artists with a Eurovision band? I have never seen anything like that in my lifetime. Of course, we've heard Loreen and Gina G on Radio 1 and things before, but this huge crossover of somebody with huge influence actually sitting there and going, this is a band you need to watch. And I just think next year's going to be like the best year ever. I'm so buzzing for it already. I just feel like there's going to be a whole new bunch of people that I've never, ever watched it before.
It's going to be very, very exciting. You've just been chatting about BBC Radio 1 as well there. And it's given me a perfect opportunity to segue to the next question, given we're going to talk about the BBC and the UK, to find out if you were in charge of the UK, if you were the head of delegation, what would you do? What would you change to try and make the UK successful again?
Okay, so first up, I would very much like this job. So if anybody could give me this job. do you know what? It's hard, isn't it? Because I appreciated the effort that they put in this year because it has been better than past years, but it still just isn't quite there. If it was a contest 10 years ago, it would have been great. But they still just are a little bit behind. And I don't know if that's because obviously with the partnership with BMG, I don't know if that's kind of come from a, we don't need to search that much for this, or like this, you know, it doesn't really matter. I don't know like what their kind of thought process is, which is hard, isn't it? Because it's like,
yeah, it's interesting because back in 2020 on the podcast, we spoke to Lee Smithurst, who is the series producer of the BBC's coverage. And I spoke to him at the time and we were trying to find out, you know, what the decision for the path was and what they were hoping the outcome would be. And the partnership with BMG was more to, you know, have a professional body make those decisions and, you know, have the support there and the aftercare there for an artist, which the BBC couldn't do. So there's clearly really good intentions there for the BBC to be going down that route. But for whatever reason, it just didn't quite hit the mark this year, did it?
And this is why it's so tricky, because it's like, I can see that they are trying to take steps forward, but they are just not quite big enough. They're not quite right. And I think Lee is a good example because he seems to really care about it and he's very passionate. And I just wonder if his hands are a bit tied. Do you know what I mean? I wonder if he's sort of trying and they're a bit like, we don't have the budget for this, or like, we don't want to do that. You just don't know what's going on behind the closed doors. That's what's really hard. And I don't want to judge anybody for that, because I reckon there are people that are probably just as frustrated as we are, but can't really voice that. But I'm hopeful that after seeing this year's contest, there might be a few changes next year. I don't know, but do you know what people always say to me all the time, and you see it trending, don't you? You see all this name, oh, Jessie J would do a good job of this, or Ed Sheeran wants to go to Eurovision. And it's just like, I think we have this problem in this country of, we have such a successful music industry that I think they think just throwing that at it is the solution. They're like, oh, let's just send Blue, we'll just send Bonnie Tyler. Do you know what I mean? And it's not right. It's like, you actually have to delve under the skin of this and embrace the culture of the contest, which is far deeper than just sending somebody who is already successful, because there's no guarantee that they're going to win. And it's hard. If it was me in charge, I'd want to be going out there finding some new talent, looking for people that care about it, they're enthusiastic about it, and kind of understand it. I think you have to understand it. You have to understand what would do well and what wouldn't do well. And things get suggested every time where people are like, yes, send that to Eurovision. It's just like, that wouldn't actually do well. And it's frustrating. I just hope that they change their attitudes a bit. But just having people like Jack or Scott Mills, or people within the BBC and within Radio 1 and things like that, that are being active cheerleaders for this thing, and talking about it completely differently, you know. I thought it was amazing to see him on his show talk about Eurovision in a completely different way. Just say, hey, this is actually really cool. This is not what I thought it was. And so we're all kind of learning this together. And I'm just hopeful that the Måneskin effect will trickle down and help us next year. But I don't know. Why did they? What was with the polystyrene trumpet? The costume.
Oh, I think we might be debriefing the polystyrene trumpets for many a year to come.
And the fact that there was no pyro. I was like, this is a song about fire. I couldn't believe it.
Going forwards for the BBC in the UK, Rob spoke to Scott Bryan, the TV critic. He's, mm-hmm. he's big on
oh,
Twitter.
I love him.
Yeah,
yes.
We spoke to him a few weeks ago, and he suggested we need some sort of multi-week national final, a Melody Festival of our own, so that the
yes.
people can really get involved, can really understand it, and can really feel invested in the process. You've sort of shouted yes at me already, but I presume it's a big yes from you, is it, Zoe?
Yes. Do you know what? I totally agree with that. And I think maybe our coverage of it in that way hasn't helped before, because we had those silly programs back in the early 2000s where Katie Price was doing one and it wasn't taken very seriously. It was a joke at the time and people would laugh and be, oh, it's comedy, but it's not. And I wonder if that kind of, and then I don't know, listen, the British public, they can't be trusted with a vote. So if we did the Melody Festival and did it amazing and it all went really well, you just know they picked the wrong one when it came to it. So I'm down for that, but I think there should be somebody. I think there should be an actual expert, not like Jonathan Ross or whoever sat there. There should be an expert going, pick this one. This is the one that will do well.
Well, we'll soon see. We've 2022 will come round in an instant, and we'll soon see what happens. So let's keep our fingers crossed that something bigger and better will happen in 2022.
I hope so. I got faith in them. I'm not giving up on them.
Not at all.
I thought this year was great progress,
yep.
And I'm hoping to see more progress that way.
Let's keep our fingers crossed. Zoe,
and
we've
if they'd like to hire me, I am free.
Oh, dear. Always looking for a job. And I don't blame you whatsoever, Zoe. That's absolutely fine.
You've got to hustle these days.
Absolutely,
<know?
laughs> yeah. Nothing wrong with it. We've reached our last big question. This is this is personal choice. So you go wild with this. One change to the contest you'd most like to see in the future. Is it DJs yeah. like you being allowed to enter music and just have a bit of a 15-minute set instead of a 3-minute song?
Yes. No, because then it would go off for like 10 hours. more Nikki tutorials. I thought she was amazing. I know that obviously she was Dutch and she was in the Netherlands, but I thought she was great. And I would like to see more embracing like that. Of social media stars and kind of catching up with it a little bit. I do find it so funny every year when they try and wheel out the DVD. It's like, nobody's buying DVDs. We've already seen it on TikTok. We're not buying the DVD. And I think that maybe they made some good progress this year posting. The social media this year was like incredible. The Twitter feed was amazing. They were posting memes, they were having a laugh. And then I saw it continue into the Euros. They were posting jokes about the Euros and making things relevant. And I think kind of more of a push into that kind of modern world. I think I'd love to see that. I'd love to see more TikTok and more Instagram and stuff like that. And I think they made really good progress with that. But other than that,
I think all you're saying really, Zoe, all you're saying really is you just want 24/7 365 day Eurovision content. Yeah. It's not a big ask. Come on, guys.
Not really. They used to do it with Big Brother. They just had a live camera, didn't they? So let's just put a live camera and we'll just watch it all on. God, I would love that live camera in the green room all the time. That would be great.
Just wherever a Eurovision artist is, even if it's in the middle of October or December or something like that. Let's just yeah. follow any Eurovision artist from any year
live
whatsoever.
Camera.
Just follow them. What are they doing?
Yes.
I want to know.
Genuinely, though, I really want to know. One of my friends tweeted the other day that she was watching a documentary about Daz Sampson. And I was like, oh, I've got to watch this documentary. And I went and found it and it was amazing. And I don't remember watching it the first time round, And it was a BBC Three documentary, and they just followed him. Well, have you seen this?
Yeah. I watched it about a year ago. Yeah, I think genuinely fascinating, though, isn't it?
Really fascinating. Yeah. It's amazing. Like, it's very hard to believe that it's real. I thought it was a bit like The Office in parts. You know? but I would just love to see more stuff like that. You know, when you look at, you know, when they publish the list of what all the TV channels are showing in the lead up to Eurovision. And obviously this year there was a lot of the Fire Saga was on pretty much every country's main TV channel. But there were a lot of things like that. There was like, I can't remember which countries did it, but like let's say like an Italian documentary about them. And there were a lot more, there was a lot more programming. And I just feel like this kind of Netflix obsession that people have with documentaries and like short stories and things, I just feel like that would work really well. And it would be nice to kind of have that in the lead up. But yes, in short, what I'm saying is I would like more Eurovision.
Eurovision all year long. Let's bring
DJ,
it.
And a DJ.
And DJing, of course. Yeah.
Contemporary feel.
Oh, Zoe, we've been on a massive journey chatting about all sorts of things. And I think you've ended it perfectly there by referencing Love, Love, Peace, Peace. So I think what a perfect way to end. Zoe London, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
See what she did there. Very good from Zoe London there on The Contest and Me. With you, James, you were all right as well. That was very good. I enjoyed that little, what was I going to call it? Tete-a-tete between the two of you for the last half an hour or so. It's going to have been longer than half an hour, isn't it? It's bound to have been, because I know that when you came off the Zoom call with her, you said it earlier on in the episode, you'd been chatting for about an hour. So I don't know how you managed to cut it all down.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe I didn't. Maybe you're just going to get the full unedited 1 hour version. Oh, but no, she was great, wasn't she? As I said at the beginning, and as I think we say every single week, she is so, so passionate, just like all of our other guests have been. And it's just great to hear other people chatting about Eurovision just as much as we love to. I particularly enjoyed the 2018 story where she said she was at the contest in 2018. I was like, well, so was I. Or, you know, we were both like, oh, let's compare stories. And clearly her stories blew all of mine out of the water.
Yeah, that was my favourite bit, because I know exactly why you brought it up, as you said, because I was also there, Zoe, and then you decided, weirdly, not to share any of your stories from your original 2018. I can't think why.
If the conversation was between me and you would have gotten all of my boring songs, but clearly Zoe popped along and had so many more.
Maybe she can get us a inside line with Yon Olasand. And that's our way of getting him on the podcast. Maybe he's the bonus guest that you're going to hear from next week. Maybe he's not.
Oh, maybe. Maybe you've got to stick around for a further 2 minutes and find out who it is. No, you have to wait and see. However, Rob, I forgot to mention something earlier on in the podcast, and I might as well bring it up now. You nearly met Zoe London a couple of weeks ago.
I did nearly meet Zoe London, well remembered. Yeah, I was coming out of a tube station in East London. I don't often frequent East London because it's a bit trendy for me. I live in West London, but Zoe London's very trendy, so I imagine she's around those parts. And I saw Zoe across the road, but it was that awkward situation where she was slightly too far away that I would have had to shout across the road. And as much as we've had Zoe on the podcast before, don't feel like I know Zoe well enough to shout her name across a busy road. So this anecdote effectively ends with me saying to you, James, yes, I did see Zoe London in London the other day. And no, I didn't say hello. That's the end of the anecdote.
Okay, so Zoe, if you're listening, I'm sure you are. Rob says hello. I'm sure you can say hello back at your earliest convenience.
We were outside a tube station on the Victoria line. Zoe, okay, if you are listening. I don't want to give away exactly where you live. You know, we got some crazy fans out there. I'm joking, obviously. But yeah, it was, where was it? A few weeks ago. Anyway, this is all by the by. Anyway, everyone's listening just thinking, can you hurry up and shut up so we can hear who the bonus guest is next week? So that's what I'll do. But Zoe, thanks for listening. To me, ramble on? I don't know.
Oh dear me, you've led yourself up the garden path here. We need to end this conversation. Zoe, thank you so much for joining us here on The Contest and Me, and thank you to everybody who's been listening over the last 6 weeks, because we have thoroughly enjoyed it. We know you've thoroughly enjoyed it as well. You've been listening in your tens or hundreds or thousands or millions. It's millions, isn't it, Rob? That's what it
says. It's definitely not tens.
All nine of you for listening. Really, really appreciate it.
So we've got James's mum, my girlfriend, your girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's at least through.
Yeah, my grandmom texted me the other day. She said, she said, "Hello, James. I hope you're okay. Listened to your interview with Steve Rosenberg and thought it was brilliant. Very interesting man. In answer to Rob's question, I listen when I'm doing the ironing."
Fan. That's the second person that we've had who's told us that they listen while doing the ironing.
Yeah.
Hello. Just... Hello. I was going to say, what's her name? Grandma's name?
We just call her Grandma. And so will you.
Oh, okay. Well, Grandma, if you're listening, hello, and thanks for your lovely comments.
Indeed.
Well, actually, I take it all back because they're about you. They had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Stuff you, Grandma.
If you are a grandma or not a grandma, feel free to get in touch with us about the podcast at YouTube
Podcast.
Very
inclusive.
Yeah, indeed, we are on Twitter and Instagram, or hello at YouTubePodcast.com on the email. But probably time for us to disappear.
I think it definitely is. So stick around, because at the end of all of this, you are going to hear who is joining us on next week's podcast for our very special bonus edition of The Contest and Me. And I don't want to pick it up too much, but it is very exciting, and I have not heard this person interviewed anywhere else.
A little bit of an exclusive, so stay tuned for that little piece at the end, and we'll be back with you for that episode next Wednesday. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it's goodbye.
And from me, Rob, it's goodbye.
If the BBC rang you to come and host a show, would you do it?
In a heartbeat.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.